Anyone who watches the news will recognize this. There's quite a bit going on right now across the country and certainly around the world with the flooding that's taking place, record floods all up and down the Mississippi River and other catastrophes and that type of thing that's taking place just not too long ago. If you watch the news, you would have seen the wildfires that are happening in various parts of the country and certainly across Texas. I printed out an article from USA Today about the Texas fires. It says, for weeks, Texans have watched and worried as fires of an intensity and breadth they had never seen rage across the state, scorching prairie land and suburbs and destroying hundreds of homes. Goes on to say that even though you hear about brush fires, wildfires, most of them are in farmland. This, however, is mixed in through residential development, so it's pretty scary. A lot of people, it says, are in shock with the amount of destruction the fires have caused throughout Texas. So far, this fire season, this spring, wildfires have charred 1.65 million acres across the state of Texas. The Texas Forest Service says that's almost twice as land as usually burns in Texas in a full year. The ravaged areas included on Monday 100 acres of flame in Austin and 325,000 acres in West Texas. So across the state, 30 to 40 fires were burning at one time. In Austin, the area of town where this occurred, it's a populated area, it says, but there's a lot of green space, and it's hilly, and it's very ripe for fires. Now, so you'll notice, reading through this, it says words like people are in shock, that they are raging, the fires are raging across the state of Texas, it's a breath and scorching that they've never seen before, and it says that they are under siege. And it goes on to talk about how they have rates of fire spreading up to 8 miles an hour. Now, that doesn't sound very fast, but if you put it in perspective, that's 2 football fields every minute that the fires were spreading across the areas where they were burning, which is covering quite a bit of ground in a short period of time. And at the shelters where people were staying because of the fires, the firefighters were having to announce addresses where the homes had burnt to the ground, as well as announcing addresses where people were able to go back to their homes. Keep that type of fire in mind, or the way that was described in mind, for a few moments. And let's jump into today's sermon on the Third Commandment. Now, we are in the series of the Ten Commandments, and we've had the first two, so today we're going to talk about the Third Commandment. The Third Commandment tells us that we are to respect the name of God. It's very clear, it's very direct and to the point. The Third Commandment tells us that we are not to trifle in any way with God's name. God makes it clear throughout His Word that names are important to Him. And we see, we have biblical examples where He changes people's names to suit what He wants to emphasize or to mean what He wants it to mean. So Saul became Paul after his conversion. Abram became Abraham. And we know that Jacob became Israel. And we also know from Scripture that each of us will receive a new name in God's kingdom from our God. So names are important to God. And God's names are very important. We understand that God reveals His name to us through His Word. And the names of God from Scripture identify various traits or characteristics of our Creator. We know that God has many names. His names reveal His authority. His names reveal that He is the lawgiver. They reveal His traits and His character. So every name of God that He applies to Himself throughout Scripture has significant and meaning. And to, in any way, blur those names or to obscure the name of God, or as the commandment says, we'll read it here in just a moment, to take it in vain, it is to lower the value or lower the quality of what His name represents. The significance of His name, the name of the eternal God. So let's turn to Exodus chapter 20 and read the third commandment. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 7. It's a very direct and clear commandment. Exodus chapter 20, verse 7, tells us, "You shall not take the name of the Eternal, your God, in vain. For the Eternal will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain." So again, there should be no doubt how important this is to God. There are certain commandments that most human beings can easily agree with. For example, thou shalt not kill. Most people will say they can understand why that's a law and why that's a Ten Commandments. But what about this? Because it's one of the Ten Commandments. It's the same as any of the other commandments as far as being in the Ten Commandments. So the third one just says, "You shall not take the name of the Eternal your God in vain, for the Eternal will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain." So God makes it clear that those who do take his name lightly, those who do take his name in vain, as it says, will not go unpunished. So when it says he will not hold them guiltless, in other words, they will be held guilty. They will be recognized as being guilty of breaking this commandment, and they will receive the appropriate punishment. They will not go unpunished. So if we are held guiltless, that means we're spiritually clean. And looking at it in today's terms with spiritual Israel, so we are spiritually clean. Let's apply this to ancient Israel at that time. So we've just observed the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. And of course, when he called ancient Israel out of Egypt and they went through the Red Sea, we understand that was a type of baptism. So they went through that type of washing or that type of baptism, and they came through there in that sense as a cleaned physical nation. God cleaned them up to be his people. I thought I would just make a mention of this, that with baptism today, as we go through baptism, we recognize the meaning behind it, and sometimes we joke about leaving the dirt in the pool or wherever it might have been, and the pool near our house where we baptized Mr. Randy Diggins has closed. I said the pipes were permanently clogged, and we'll never be able to baptize there again. But I'm sure it wasn't because of Mr. Diggins. But they went through the Red Sea, that type of baptism. They were cleaned up. But God says if you do take the name, his name, in vain, then we will not be guiltless. We will be guilty. So it's important to understand what this means. And it's important as Christians that we follow through and obey the third commandment. It's a big deal. It is a big deal. It's not a trivial matter to misuse God's name. So when it talks about in vain, it's important to understand what that's referring to, what that means, because that word, it means that something is worthless or something is empty, something is useless without any results or without any productivity. So there's no value to it. There's just nothing there. So when we talk about vanity or we talk about being puffed up with air, there's just nothing to it. So there's nothing inside. Sometimes we use the term that it's form without substance. And it can also mean fraud or deceit or deception or falsehood. So it's important that we understand when it says, "Do not take the name of the Lord your God in vain," and what it is it's talking about. Let's look at other places where this word, same word, is translated and used. Psalm 127. All of us should recognize this psalm from the hymn that we sing, Psalm 127. Here it is used by the psalmist to state that all activities, such as laboring or guarding or rising up early, staying up late, it's all useless without God's blessings, without God's help and God's guidance and assistance. Verse 1, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Same word there. They labor in vain. It's useless. It's empty. It's worthless. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchmen stay awake in vain. And so it doesn't matter whether they're there or not. It's vain, it's useless or empty for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows. For so he gives his beloved sleep. So we've talked before about the fact that some people have a proclivity to worry. Most human beings do, to some degree or another. So he's saying that staying up late or rising up early with our problems and worries going through our mind, it doesn't do us any good at all. The way it's put in the Gospels, you might remember, is if you're short and you want to be tall and you're worried about being short and you just keep thinking, oh, I wished I was tall, it doesn't work. Does it, Julio? It doesn't for me. I know that much. Who can add any cubic to his height by worrying? None of us can. We know that. So the same word here is translated vain, and it means, again, empty, worthless, useless, without results, without any good result. And then let's turn to Jeremiah 18. Last Sabbath we covered the second commandment in idolatry. And here in Jeremiah chapter 18, Jeremiah is talking again about pathways, ancient paths and pathways. And remember that when the Bible talks about that, or a walk or a path or a trail, it's talking about a way of life more often than not. And that's what he's referring to here as well. In verse 15, Jeremiah 18, verse 15 says, because my people have forgotten me, they have burned incense to worthless idols, and they have caused themselves to stumble in their ways from the ancient path, to walk in pathways and not on a highway. And so they left the way that they were taught, the ancient path, and they're going their own way. But they have burned incense to worthless idols. So that word worthless is the same one translated vain that we read in Psalm 127 and in the third commandment, where it says, you shall not take the Lord's name in vain. So God is telling us and making it very clear that as His children, as those who claim to be His family, to represent the eternal God, we are to live in a way which reflects His standards. We are to reflect God's standards, our Father in heaven, His standards. Now, some time ago, at the Jackson's house, for many Saturday nights, we did a class on growing kids God's way. And some of you participated, some of you babysat every Saturday night for a long time. One of the things that comes out of that class is we are encouraged as families to develop a sense of identity. And he gave various examples. For example, your family might say this. We are known for being honest. Whenever anybody thinks of our family name, our reputation will be one of honesty. We'll be known as the honest family. So I tried to come up for something for our family, and Valerie didn't like it. Because I said, if you're a waddle, walk like it. Everyone should know you're a waddle. Just walk like it. They'll know. But we, of course, the identity that we have, and as parents have tried to pass on to our children, is God's identity of obeying God, living according to God's way of life. And it's clear that
our Father has given His children, His family, an identity. And He wants us to live according to His standards and to be identified as His family. Now let's look in Deuteronomy 5. Because I want to make a point from here in Deuteronomy 5 where we know that the commandments were given again to the people of Israel. So here we have a new generation of Israelites, the younger ones, who are about to cross the Jordan River into the Promised Land. We understand that they were to be the example nation. They were given God's laws. They were to obey God. They would be blessed for obeying God. And the other nations would recognize it and they would say, wow, we'd like to live like you do and be blessed as you're blessed. Of course, we know it didn't work that way, but that was the idea behind it. So they were told, again, that part of their identity as the nation of God or the people of God is that they do not in any way, shape or form, take His name lightly. So for the younger generation, it was reemphasized, the Ten Commandments. And we have in verse 11, again, the third commandment. You shall not take the name of the Eternal your God in vain, for the Eternal will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. And so part of our identity as God's people, as God's church, is we pass this on to our young people. The new generation, the youth, same standards. That it's important as young people, they learn not to take God's name in vain. So it's important that we all recognize the responsibility that we have to God to live up to this standard and to pass this standard on to our children. So it's important to God. It should be important to us. While we're in Deuteronomy, let's turn a few chapters over to chapter 14. I want to use just a couple of verses here in this chapter. And I'm going to tell you before I even read the verses that this is an extreme example. But I want to use this to make a certain point. So once I go through this, I'm going to try to clarify my point so that everyone understands why I'm using this example. Deuteronomy 14, typically we'll turn here and we'll think that we're going to talk about clean and unclean meats. But if you look at verse 1, it says, you are the children of the Lord your God. You shall not cut yourselves, nor shave the front of your head for the dead. For you are a holy people to the Eternal your God, and the Eternal has chosen you to be a people for Himself, a special treasure above all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. So we see it says, you are the children of the Eternal your God. You shall not cut yourselves, nor shave the front of your head for the dead. Now, why would God tell them not to cut themselves? Well, if you remember last week when we talked about the Christian symbols that are so prevalent, what people assume and use as Christian symbols, they're so prevalent all around us. And they're such a part of our culture. Most people have no idea why they originated or how they originated. And they don't care. They don't even apply the fact that they were used in pagan worship. And just because you call it Christian doesn't make it Christian. Well, we talked about how it's important not to conform to society just because society says it's okay. Well, here we have a situation where people around them, the nations around them, were worshiping in a way that they would actually cut themselves. We have examples of this in Scripture. We won't turn there. I'm just going to refer to it. But do you remember the example of Elijah and the priest of Baal? So we have this wonderful battle going on and this great miracle that God showed who the true God was. But when the priest of Baal were trying to get their gods, their false gods, to consume the sacrifice,
They were dancing around. The Bible says they were dancing and leaping, and all of a sudden, their false gods are not burning up the sacrifice. So they get out their knives and their swords, and they start cutting themselves, and it says there's blood all over the place. I mean, it was a horrible thing, I'm sure, to see, but it was around them. It was a custom of the people and a part of their worship. So God had to tell them, don't conform to society. Don't pick up how they worship and make it a part of how you worship. So the reason I bring that in is because something like that, we can understand that it's just not right, that it's just not good. That if we want to set the right example, we're not going to cut ourselves as part of worship. So if somebody invited you over on a Friday night, somebody from church said, come on over for dinner, and after dinner, they say, okay, kids, get the knives out. You're going to think, wait a minute, something's wrong. They're conforming to something that's not godly, that's not good, that's not right. What about if somebody is using God's name in vain? Because that's wrong. God says it's wrong. Don't conform to society. And brethren, it's all around us. It's all around us. Every day, if you watch any TV or any movie, sooner or later, somehow, somewhere, somebody is going to take God's name in vain. So we need to understand that this is something that's important to God. God says, don't do it. In our society, some people think they can get around taking God's name in vain by using euphemisms. We deal with this every year at camp. I was talking about applying for camp. Every single year we have someone that if they're not outright cussing, they're using euphemisms. And of course, it's a teaching opportunity to where we'll talk to them about it. Does everyone understand what a euphemism is? I'll tell you. It's the use of a word or phrase to replace another one. So a word or a phrase that's considered less offensive or less vulgar than the word or phrase it replaces. So it's a word or phrase that's used to replace another one and is considered less vulgar. Well, brethren, please understand that any euphemism that is used simply to disguise the way that someone is using God's name in vain is not okay. Just because we change a few letters or the pronunciation of the word, the meaning's the same. And you know what? God knows. Just because we change the way we say it, God still knows what it means and how it's being used. And it's still not right. It's not up to God's standard. Euphemisms are simply a substitute. And just because we alter a few letters doesn't mean it's okay. So again, words like gosh, golly, for those of you who text, if you text with people sometime sooner or later, OMG comes up. And I've had that come up on my phone and I'm, oh! Because automatically my mind thinks what it means, what it stands for. And if you watch any movies or TV shows, there have been times where they've used God's name in vain over and over and over. I've had to turn off a show I wanted to watch. I couldn't take it anymore. It's as if they just want everyone to get numb to it or just become accustomed to it. And that's why I use that one example. We know using knives in worship that way is wrong. Well, using God's name in vain in any way is wrong. Things like my goodness or my God, goodness gracious, good grief. You know, just because Charlie Brown says it doesn't mean it's right. And then there are the substitutes for Jesus Christ. I worked with a man that constantly said Jiminy Cricket. And that's just a euphemism. It's just a substitute. So it's the type of thing we have to guard against. And I could go on and on, but my purpose is not to list every euphemism for God's name,
But I do want to emphasize, because it is my purpose, that we are held to a higher standard. We are held to God's identity. And we are held to obey the third commandment. So just because it's all around us does not mean it's okay. I appreciated the message in the sermonette. It was explained very well, I thought, that section of scriptures. And just because it's all around us does not mean it's okay. Just because human beings tell us it's okay does not mean it's okay. So our words are to reflect God's standards. And we are to set the example because our words are important to God. There are other euphemisms. It's very common to take God's name in vain. And again, I don't want to go through a long list of euphemisms, but euphemisms for damn, the dang or dang it or darn. We have to guard against that type of language. It's all around us. It can become common. I'm sure since we've been here 3 years, I've told you this story before, but I warned Vivian that I was going to tell you again today. When she was 6 years old, when she was in the first grade, I think she was six. She might have been five in preschool. I don't know exactly, but six in the first grade, she's shaking her head there. There was a popular cartoon on TV, and they came out with a board game. The kids liked to watch this cartoon, and they had a board game made of it. And so I bought the board game for them, and we would sit from time to time and play this game. And it was a very simple game. And you had to roll a dice or a die. There was just one. And if you got a 1, 2, or 3, you got to move your piece on the board, however many numbers. If you got a 4, 5, or 6, you had to stay there and take some kind of card and do whatever it said. And one time she rolled, and she got a 6, and she said, D-A-M-N. And that was rather shocking to hear that come from the mouth of a 6-year-old at just the right time. So not only did she know the word, she knew how it was used. And I knew Valerie didn't use that word. So where did it come from? Of course, we stopped playing the game and we started asking questions. And finally, between the two girls, we understood there was someone at school that was in the after-school program. I think he was a year or two older, maybe. But he consistently used various curse words at various times. And just by being around that and hearing that, it shows us how easy it is for it to become common and for it to become something that we can just become used to. And once we become used to it, we can conform to it. And we fall in the pattern of doing the same thing that's going on around us. So it's important that we guard against it. There's an author who is autistic. I wanted to pronounce her name for you. It's Temple Grandin, G-R-A-N-D-I-N. She has written several books, primarily about how animals, let me put it this way, how autistic human beings think like animals. Now, she said they're on the emotional level of an animal, not their IQ level. She has a very high IQ level. But the way that she thinks, because of her autism, is more on the level of animals. She is an expert in the field of developing, I know this sounds funny since she's an expert with animals, but she develops slaughterhouses for cattle and for hogs and for chickens. And the reason she has become an expert is because what happens is the way some of them are designed, before the animals are actually slaughtered to become food, they are panicked and their adrenaline rushes through their blood and gets into the meat and things of that nature. And so she is able to design them to where they are comfortable and relaxed and they walk right up to the chute and wait their turn to die. And so she goes through the process of designing this. But she's written some books on this, and one of the books talks about how animals never become accustomed to what is wrong. And she uses the example. I have an article here from Discover Magazine from March of 2005. I've had it for years, and I've been amazed at this. But she uses the example of a hog farmer. So just let me be clear, I'm not saying hog is good to eat. But this hog farmer had this plan to make his hogs leaner so that the meat would be leaner. But he had his pen set up in such a way that the hogs were always stressed. Now, you and I might not know that. One hog goes, and another hog goes, and we don't know why. But she could go and watch them and listen to them, and she knew that they were stressed. And so even though they had his meat tested, and they had another hog farmer's meat tested where the pigs were fat and happy, and even though the meat was leaner, it wasn't better as far as the nutrients within the meat because the pigs weren't happy pigs. And he did it for years, and the pigs never adjusted to their surroundings. I don't know exactly what it was that made them go off like that, but they never adjusted to their surroundings. And she talks about in her book that human beings adjust to bad. She calls it bad becoming normal. She uses the same examples from chicken farms as well. But what fascinates me about it is that she goes to say that the animals never adapt to bad. They never get used to if something around them is wrong or if something around them is bad. And she talks about how humans have the ability to adjust to bad surroundings. It says animals with bad becoming normal, they don't have it as a moral concept, where people could have it as a moral concept. But again, the animals never adjust to bad. And she says that, I'm trying to find a specific quote in here that I didn't mark. She talks about humans will cut the anchor and drift from practical experience. So that's one of the quotes that she uses. Humans will cut their anchor and drift away from practical experience. Well, if we look at the Ten Commandments as anchors that keep us anchored to God's standards and God's way of life, if we cut any of those anchors, we start to drift. And bad can become normal. And every one of us should recognize the scriptures that say, woe to those who call bad good and good evil, or evil good and good evil. So none of us want to do that. So we need to recognize that the Ten Commandments are anchors that tie us in to God's standards. And it's important that we don't accept what is wrong and adapt to it, conform to it. Let's look at Matthew chapter 6. Now in Matthew 6, we understand we have the outline prayer. Verse 9, in this manner therefore pray, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Hallowed be your name. Who is hallowing God's name today? What should be God's family? We should be setting the example. Hallowed means to be sanctified, to be set apart for holy, something that is holy. God's name is set apart from any other name. Never forget that. God's name is set apart from any other name. And it is our responsibility, it's part of our calling to hallow God's name, to honor God's name. It's our responsibility to live up to this standard and not allow the world, the customs of the world, to become a part of our lives, to become a part of who we are. Since we're in Matthew 5, let's look at or I should say close to Matthew 5. Let's look at another verse here, Matthew chapter 5. Verse 33. Look at this from another angle.
Matthew 5, verse 33 says again, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord.'" In other words, if you do swear to God, you better do it. Verse 34, "But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is in God's throne, nor by earth, for it is His footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one." Now we understand that Christ is not saying, don't talk unless you're just saying yes or no. It's not wrong to communicate. It's not wrong to talk. We have other verses that talk about God's people coming together and talking. But what he is saying is don't swear. Because we can't control things. And how many times have you heard someone say, "I swear on my mother's grave," or "I swear on the Bible," or "I swear on my children's heads," and things of that nature. People say that. How can they cause it to happen? Who are they to guarantee that something's going to happen just because they say these words? They don't have that power. God does. So they're claiming that kind of power from God. They can't make it happen. And it's even in our children's nursery rhymes. Here it says, "Don't swear by your head or by the hair of your head." And of course we have, "By the hair of my chinny chin chin." You know, he's saying the same thing. He's guaranteeing he's going to do something by the hair of his chinny chin chin. That's exactly what that is referring to. Those pigs, they can't make it happen. We can't either. So it's important not to swear. That's a form of taking God's name in vain. Swearing and saying you're going to do something. I brought up growing kids God's way earlier and talked a little bit about it. Another thing that was in the growing kids God's way class that I thought was a profitable takeaway was the urging for parents not to make promises to their kids and not to promise various things, because what if you can't follow through with that kind of promise? Our kids quit doing this early on, but they used to come to me at various times and they'll innocently just say things, "Will you promise to take us to get ice cream?" Or, "Will you promise to do this or that?" And I tried to be very careful to say, "I will give you my word that I will do my best." But I was very cautious about saying, "I promise." Because what if you got struck by lightning? You promised to do something, and yet you're lying there in the yard frying, and you can't do it. You can't control whether or not that's going to take place. So it's important that we recognize that this is a form, because God can do it. And what we're saying, if we're using that type of language, we're saying that God is going to do this for me. This is so true, it's so right, God will follow through on this. I can make this happen, I can make God do this. That is a form of taking God's name in vain. And none of us are worthy to do that. None of us can make God do that. So be aware. Don't allow that to happen. Don't allow that to conform, because people around us will do that from time to time. We'll hear it. Of course, another form of swearing is cursing or using curse words or profane, corrupt speech. And of course, there's all kinds of euphemisms for curse words. So I just want to bring that up to the extent that as Christians, living according to God's standards, that's not good. It's not right. So we need to avoid words that are simple replacement for curse words. And so you might be wondering now what you can say when you hit your thumb with a hammer. I'm not going to tell you what to say. I have done that more than once, and I say "ow" or something of that nature. But the Bible's very clear as far as this type of language.
We want to avoid swearing and cursing, even with euphemisms. So we want to avoid profane or corrupt speech. We have very clear spiritual principles. We have very clear standards that we are to strive to live up to. And if we're not reflecting God's way of life, if we're not reflecting the identity of God's family, then who is? This is our responsibility. It's part of our calling as Christians. Notice in Psalm 19, a beautiful psalm, and one verse in here can sum up our goal as far as our speech and our words. And as far as our respect for God's name and not using God's name in vain in any sense or form. Psalm 19, I'm just going to read verse 14. Where it says, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Eternal, my strength and my Redeemer." So let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Eternal, my strength and my Redeemer. So we have from time to time emphasized various sections of scriptures or various verses that are good to open your Bible when you're praying, when you're kneeling before God and pray. And this is a wonderful example of a verse, a beautiful prayer that all of us can consider praying before God and certainly meditating. Because this is our goal as God's people, that our words and the meditation of our heart, our motivations, are acceptable before God. Let's turn to James chapter 3. The focus of the sermon is, of course, the third commandment. But I want to emphasize the importance of how important it is that we are aware of our words and the use of our tongues. Verse 2, James chapter 3 and verse 2 says, "For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man." Of course, the word perfect, it means mature. We've talked about that many times. It means that he is able to act like an adult. He is a mature individual, able to bridle the whole body. And James uses some analogies here to put it in perspective. It says, "Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouth that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles." So I read the article about the fires in Texas earlier, and I left out one section of it that talked about they know how some of the fires started, the ones that burned many of the houses in Austin. There was a man who was arrested because he left a campfire burning. He neglected the fire. So he had a small campfire. He went away from it. The wind picked it up, blew the embers around, and it burned thousands of acres and many homes, multiple homes. So when James says, recognize how great a fire the tongue can cause, how much trouble, how much angst, how much difficulty. Our words, that's what it's referring to. We know if you don't speak, it doesn't cause any trouble. That's what comes out of our mouth that causes the problems. And once it's out, Every time I'm giving a sermon or talking about words, it's hard not to emphasize this. If you ever have said something you regret, don't you wish there was a reverse button? Hit that reverse button, take those few seconds back, and then don't say it. But we can't do that. Once it's out, it's out. So it's important to think before we speak. That's a proverb, a principle that we strive to live by and strive to teach our children. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. Maybe some of you have been to a circus and you've seen the elephants sit up, and you've seen elephants put their feet on people's heads without crushing them like melons. Or maybe you've seen somebody put their head in a lion's mouth, and or you've seen the dolphins jump through hoops and various things like that. So he says we do these incredible things with these incredible animals, and yet the tongue has been tamed by no man. No man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. So that was emphasized in the sermonette. We're made in the image of God, and yet people will curse. They'll use their mouths to curse other human beings. Verse 10, out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. So out of our mouths we proclaim to be Christians. And by doing so, it's our responsibility to live up to the standards that our Father has given us. The principles are clear. We need to guard our words. And it's the same standard for all of us. Let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 1. First Peter chapter 1, verse 13, we're told, therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lust that's in your ignorance. And so again, we're told not to conform. Like we emphasized in Romans chapter 12, do not be conformed, but be transformed. Verse 15 here says, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. And so we see the standard that God has given us for our words, and certainly for the third commandment as far as not taking his name lightly or in vain or making it of no value or worthless. But we are to be holy in all of our conduct, certainly in our words. Verse 17, and if you call on the Father who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your sojourning here in fear, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Jesus Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. So we recognize the calling that we have, and we recognize the standard that God has set for His family. The third commandment is a high standard. And if we think in our minds, well, we don't say the cuss words that we commonly assume is using God's name in vain, that we're okay. But it's important to guard against euphemisms. They're not holy. God doesn't take them lightly, and we shouldn't either. He who called us is holy, and we also should be holy in all of our conduct. So again, God doesn't take it lightly. It is our responsibility to understand the anchors that God has given us in the Ten Commandments, to stay anchored, to tie ourselves to God's standards, and be the right example, never making light of our Creator's name, never taking God's name in vain.